Welcome, Rec Radio, episode 20 something, maybe 27?
26. 26.
26. I
We
try
are
to sneak an
months.
extra one in there.
We're 6 months deep.
Damn, that's pretty good. We've had some great guests, I feel like, so far. We got Nate Alex today, but obviously we got a little bit to talk about before we get into chatting with him. OSF, why don't you talk about the sponsor, who I'm not partnered with as well?
Yeah. As you guys know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit, one of the largest crypto casinos out there, but also a future trading platform, sports betting, NFT lending, loads of random gambling stuff, everything like any kind of like degenerate activity is basically on Rollbit. So make sure you check out rollbit.com or rollbot.com, depending on your jurisdiction. As usual, we're going to have two codes to give away on the show, followed by the loot box spin at the end of the show. Make sure you retweet the pinned tweet on the Rect Radio account. That's the one that we're going to pick the loot box participants from. But the first code is PepeRect1062. PepeRect1062. And this show is also streamed live on YouTube as well. So make sure you check out the YouTube channel on Rug Radio. Back to KBM.
Yes, sir. Live on the Rug Radio YouTube as well, as OSF said. So, yeah, what's new with the current events, guys? I mean, I'm publicly shorting the market again. Seems week in and week out that this is a repeat offender.
Yeah.
But it's going well.
The start of this week, it felt like a terrible market to trade, right? Like it would just bounce as soon as it felt like it was going to fall. And it was just chopping horrifically. Like big wicks up, big wicks down in the same days and all that stuff. But now it feels like there's a little bit of momentum for it to go lower. I feel like all this debt, like where all these bond auctions are closing is just like absolutely insane. And still feels like politicians are a little bit clueless about what's going to happen. So although I do think this all ends well and then the market's like giga bounces, because I think
you think though that does the market really need a giga bounce off that? I mean, like, everything's up quite a fucking lot, and it was just like the mega caps keeping everything up. And I mean,
yeah, but positioning is the most short stocks and most short bonds close to it's ever been. So yes, yeah, you know, but everyone was positioned for it, so it feels like one of those ones where everyone's in the game. Like, you know, you can even see on Twitter, like every single major trader is like short, you know, we're going to go through resistance. And I just feel like that's probably going to happen, but it's going to happen in the same way that it happened before. So like, we'll have this wick down, and then you've got to make sure that you you monetize it, because I think then you wick back up just because of positioning.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it does feel like there's an underlying weakness in the whole market. There has been for a bit. It's like at the top end of that range, you could tell it was just getting weaker and weaker every time they tried to print the top of the range. But now we're at the bottom of the range, and we're leaking a little bit lower here. I mean, I don't know. Like you said, everyone thinks we're going to break through. I mean, I'm in that camp as well, although I did cover some of the short because I'm trading my P&L a little bit. But I don't know. Hopefully there's some volatility. I think that's all anyone who's trading really wants, right?
Yeah.
I've been shorting alts versus... I think I'm fine in Bitcoin and ETH. They seem like they will probably fall out of bed, but not in the same way that some of these alts are sort of just never going to come back.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's just you can get so much more liquidity and leverage on Bitcoin and ETH. I always just like find myself in those instead. I don't know. It's a lot tracking all the alts, but I guess it's a pretty safe bet to just bet they'll go down, because it seems like most just trend to zero.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. That's what I like on Robert, because you can just snipe them quite well. Like, in the same way you can snipe Bitcoin and ETH, you can normally snipe one of these alts. If you snipe a good one, then it's...
Yeah, exactly. So, do we get Nate's mic working? I know we had some technical difficulties, as goes with the show. I actually forgot some of my cords in Miami, so I don't even have my correct shit.
We see.
It sounds like we don't have his mic working.
Yeah, we see you, but we can't hear you. That's fine. That's cool. That works the best, man. Like, we just don't need to hear you, and just like, just like smile.
So why don't you go on the Twitter Spaces, and then we'll just have you up as an avatar in here, and that's probably the easiest thing to do.
No, you can have the video up here. Just the audio will come through Twitter Spaces, basically.
Yeah, people could watch and lip read them, I guess.
Yeah.
So while we're waiting for Nate to get on the spaces, I mean, will I be able to hear him on there?
I think so. You there, Nate?
Is there like a latency problems? Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, now there is, but it's fine.
I think it's good. Yeah. I think it's good.
Yeah, it's a very small delay.
All right, hang on. Let me swap.
Yeah, we're professionals. We can work with a small delay. Well,
to be honest, like out of the last four guests, you're like number one.
Yeah, you're doing the best.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess I didn't know about the StreamYard thing, so I just am not really set up at all for video and whatever. But
it's all good. Can somebody turn them up a little bit, or do I have to do that? I don't know.
Hey, how about that?
All right. Does that sound any better?
Nate, are you there?
Any better? Worse?
Perfect. Good. So,
cool.
Welcome to Rekt Radio, Nate. We're happy to have you on.
Yeah, thanks.
I guess might as well get right into it and try to get a little bit on your background for people who might not know you. I mean, like, I know you as a early NFT trader. I mean, like, you adopted NFTs pretty fucking early. You had some crazy grails. Maybe let some go a little early. Maybe, I don't know. But we'd love to hear a little bit about that and about your background and try to introduce yourself to everyone who may not know much about you.
Sure. Yeah. So I've been in the space since 2017. Missed claiming punks, of course, but started at the end of that year. And just sort of, you know, the same, you know, what I usually tell people is like the reason I got interested is the same reason that most people get interested is you see these like obscene numbers. And, you know, like you see people getting rich and you're just, for me, you're just working like a normal job. Like, what the fuck? Like, I need to figure out what's going on in this space. And then, you know, I stayed in the space for several years where basically nothing was going on and it was boring and kind of like it is right now. And then, you know, just like learned a bunch through that, picked up, you know, coding and Solidity, started making my own projects and stuff. Yeah, so I just have been collecting, trading, you know, started posting on Twitter and stuff more like, I guess like 3 years ago, just was kind of sarcastic and just annoying, I guess. And that kind of caught on after a while. So yeah, I mean, I've owned, traded punks, autoglyphs, minted those, you know, art blocks. I was one of the earliest kind of big mentors of those and, you know, fumbled pretty much everything. That's part of the things that I like to share is I think a lot of people like to just share their wins and flex their wins. And I think it's good to kind of share both sides of it. Cause it just isn't realistic to believe, that you only win in this space. I mean, it's part of that's why there is so much opportunity because it is so risky sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think going with our show, Rekt Radio, so we know a little bit about fumbling, getting wrecked and all that shit. I mean, I don't know if we want to jump right into the fumbles, but I guess we're going to have to at some point. What do you think your earliest and biggest, like, you know, fumbles were? I know you had you had some crazy punks, right? Or how many autoglyphs? Let's maybe get some dive deep into the numbers on some of the things.
Can I just say, Nate, we didn't get you on because like, we wanted to just go through your
fumbles.
No.
We
actually that's true. I don't know if you want to. I feel bad. In the spirit of the show, you have to. Yeah, I'm just like, here, first question. Yeah.
We don't lose.
Your worst.
We don't lose. I know you've seen KBS Twitter. Me and Obi sold some apes for a lot the other day. So we don't. Yeah. We like to get people like you on just to talk to.
Oh, you're right.
Well,
you know,
come on.
You guys will have your day sooner or later to lose. It hasn't happened yet, but it's coming. Don't worry.
Oh, I lose a lot, too. I lose a lot, too. Don't worry.
So, I mentioned that I minted autoglyphs. This was back in 2019, April. And I was actually at work when it happened. Oh shit. Is my audio cutting out? My phone is being fucked up now.
you're fine.
Okay, cool. So anyways, I minted them. I spent a little over $1,000 and like showed people at work and they all thought it was so fucking stupid. And I'd been trading like CryptoKitties at this point for a while. And then like within a week, they were like 10X and, you know, so I turned $1,000 into $10,000 on paper, I guess. And I'm like flexing on everybody at work and like just dumping autoglyphs, you know, at a, you know, two ether with $1,000 or whatever. It wasn't even $1,000. I don't even remember what it was. But so yeah, that was like the start of a long career of fumbling bags. Like the only thing I think that I really kept fully intact was like my CryptoKitties collection, which is still awesome. And one day I'll fumble it, I think, but just not yet, you know. Yeah, with punks, you know, I had about 70 punks that I traded through. And now I have one that I just bought for like 100 ether. So it's not even like I even kept one through it. I had to like buy it back. It's super expensive. And, you know, I bought a zombie punk that I sold to G Money for 16K, which, you know, whatever. And then he like sold it for like 1.5 million. I don't know, like a month later. No, it was like 2 months. It was something like it's fucking annoying like that. And I think there was another zombie that I bought that pranksy. He sniped, and it was like a coincidental thing because he wasn't using a bot or anything. But I had offered on it, and the guy went to accept the offer, and like in the same like 2-block window, pranked had made a bigger offer. And the way the punk's offer system works is when you accept it, if there's a bigger offer made, that's why I think even like Punk's OTC would do like some front running sniping like that on the Punk's offer. So that happened like manually with me with a zombie. And oh man, there's just so many good bags that I just, you know, but you know, the way I look at it too is I think this might be relatable to some people. Like if you're like a multimillionaire, you can sit on $100,000 bags. It's not really that big a deal. Like, who cares? I can wait, kind of thing. When you're dealing with not a lot of money, you have to keep it moving and you have to keep kind of stacking. And I was in that position for, you know, years. So that was like my mindset. And then even in these cases, I like the best punk that I ever owned, I sold for 44 ether in September 2020, which was a hero sale. Like all like the people that are well known in the space, you know, Pranksy, Jimmy, Poopy, Carlini, some of these guys are like, we're like high-fiving behind the scenes. And I'm like, I really hate to sell it. But they're like, dude, you dumped that shit on Danny. He's like, why is he paying that much for it? And then, of course, he was right, you know. But I think that's just part of it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can spin this into a positive, though. I mean, you're clearly really good at like analyzing trends before they start. And you hopped on all these things before they were popular. I think that's something like, you know, not everyone has a skill to do or find or take the leap of faith into something that's so brand new. I mean, what do you think why do you think you're able to find these things? Like what do you look for when you're looking for new things, new trends? Cause in this space, there's always narratives and trends. And I mean, like just because you sold early, you were still on the most like amazing ones in the NFT space. So, I mean, do you have like a playbook when you're looking at that kind of stuff, or is it just kind of like buy a bunch of stuff and see what sticks or what?
So, yeah, I mean, I think that for me, like my strategy is usually I try to find things that could have a good story or a good narrative before other people have kind of realized that. So like punks right now, I mean, I think it's pretty good, safe as far as like NFTs go investment, because, you know, they kind of reached that sort of level of art history where we kind of sort of foresaw that, like, you know, years and years ago. I mean, I never thought that they would get. I couldn't believe when they were worth $500,000 a piece. That was just unheard of, because like my upside was like, maybe they'll be worth $10,000 a piece. Like that would be pretty crazy. But you know, I just look for things that have good stories to tell, because whenever, you know, crypto is so tribal, and whenever you have things with momentum and people are, you know, looking into them and wanting to tell other people about them, well, it does no good if the only thing you have to say is the price is going up. That's why people build all these bullshit stories around things that do have prices going up. You know, they turn them into, oh, well, Bitcoin is also a meme, and so is this coin is a meme coin. So see, that's the same thing. And they come up with stories like that. Some of those work, I guess, short term, and you can get some momentum like that. But like for sustained stuff, you really need things that people can resonate with, people can align with. That's kind of my same thesis with NFTs in general. I didn't see a lot of real, what I'd call like real use cases for crypto at the time. I mean, even DeFi was kind of like money game stuff. But like NFTs, I felt there's something to this digital ownership thing. There's something to this ownership layer of the internet. There's something deeper here that I think people will get, and they actually will be okay to, like, once they've accepted the fact that I'm spending this fake digital money, you know, and they can kind of understand how you could, I don't know. There's just something bigger underlying there. So I knew that, like, the whole theme of that is big. And I actually have a pretty good analogy I might bring up later. Not really analogy, just something I've been thinking about quite a bit. I guess the general idea is that, like, I think NFTs, I think they have more upside than just physical collectibles, even as, like, the size of that market. So I used to think it was capped by that market. Now I think that it's going to be a lot bigger than that market. And I feel like I've been talking for a long time, so hopefully I'm not rambling too much, but I'll just
finish. No, no.
Like, the thing that I've been thinking is, like, let's say you have, like, Babe Ruth's last home run bat or some shit, and it's worth millions of dollars, and it was passed down to you, and, like, you want to sell it. How do you do that? Do you have a network of multimillionaires that might be willing to buy this bat? Would you trust meeting somebody on the internet to bring them this bat? Like, the only way you can really do it is to go through, like, trusted auction houses or Sotheby's and Christie's. And that's why those places exist. That's why King of Collectibles on Netflix is worth hundreds of millions of dollars, because he's the middleman for that. Well, with NFTs, you don't have to do that shit. You have something completely historic. You just list it on OpenSea and you just fucking wait until somebody comes by and scoops it up. And there's just so much less friction there. And I think that that just gives a lot more. I mean, it just means there's a lot more potential there to me.
I think that's, like, yeah, it's because what I think is different to you, and you kind of call everyone out, all the fucking influencers and whatever, is that you still trade a lot. Like, you are buying stuff every day. Of all the kind of, let's say, known people in the space, I think you probably trade the most number of NFTs. So do you still think there is a chance to be early on some of this stuff? And if so, what are the stuff that you're interested in right now?
So I think that it's hard to be early on something that has been out for a long time, unless it's, like, really cheap and it has a really good underlying story and people are just completely missing it. And I mean, those things happen, you know, it's hard. People don't believe that. Like, I see, like, NFT tier lists, and it's always so fucking predictable. It's always going to be Bored Apes and Punks at the top. And then it just goes by floor price. And that's how people think of tier lists. And that's so fucking dumb. Like, that's ridiculous. If you go back to 2018 or 2019 and you made tier lists like that, Punks are not even on the tier list. They're off the bottom of it because there was no volume and nobody was trading them. They had a great story and we knew that. And even, like, CryptoKitties, you know, and I would argue that, like, CryptoKitties whales and influencers, if you could have called us that back then, we kind of made the market on Punks. Like, we brought a lot of interest over there and, like, introduced a ton of people to them because we thought they were cool. We didn't control the supply and own a ton of them like we did with CryptoKitties. And, you know, and maybe that helped them out. I actually think that one of the reasons Punks did so well, and this may not be a popular opinion, is because so many of the holders that had a lot had given up and they weren't paying attention at all. So you had this, you know, this inrush of liquidity and you had no sellers. And I mean, that's why you had guys like Mr. 703. I mean, outside of him, but once he finally got cleaned out, nobody was really dumping anymore.
Mr. 703.
Oh, yeah.
Who's Mr. 703? Maybe I didn't know.
He was the guy that claimed 703 punks, right?
Well,
claimed, yeah. 703 punks, came back 2021, probably after seeing it in the media or something. Or I don't know. Maybe he was still active, but never sold. He just came back to a treasure chest. And that's great to have a vision to claim that many and burn that much gas. But I also think that it's just different than, say, like CryptoKitties, where most of the biggest players stayed active all the way through. So whenever there was some volume come, they're like, oh shit, I need to dump this thing for 1.5x, not wait till it goes 100x or whatever. But anyways, the question about, like, can you be early to things? I think, I won't call out anything specific. Like, for me, I buy things that are cheap. I don't like to buy Bored Apes. They're too expensive for me. I mean, somebody who's, you know, taking a safer approach, if they want to buy a ton of punks and wait 10 years, then that's a pretty good approach. For me, like, I'm still looking to run it up big again. And, you know, if I can buy 50 of something for 0.1, that's more attractive to me, if it has the right pieces. It doesn't mean that anybody will tell the story. You never know what narratives will catch on. Like the on-chain narrative, people have ran with that. You know, and we, you know, we talked about that in 2020. We, Jimmy and I especially, did a lot of work with that, you know, built projects around that. And then in 2021, the narrative kind of became popular and people kind of bought the new stuff outside of like Autoglyphs, the first original one. But I mean, that's why like Autoglyphs are so great. Like they started this trend and, you know, they were super cheap back then. So I think the kind of things that I buy usually are going to be things that could have trends come up after them. Art Blocks was another, I mean, that one's obviously blown up now, but when I first minted it, it was the same thing. I thought, this is like, I was calling it like the super rare of generative art. It's going to be great. There's going to be so many artists, you know, making cool generative art through this, and it's going to funnel back to the first three. And unfortunately, I bought like 10% of the supply of construction tokens and Genesis, and I didn't buy 10% of the supply of Squiggle, because I'm just an idiot and I don't know why I didn't. I bought the wrong two, but it doesn't matter. The point is that there was a story to be told there, and I waited probably a year before people started really telling it. I never really pushed the stories that much myself. I might tell some friends, this is why I'm buying this, or this is what I'm kind of thinking. But yeah, I think that there's definitely going to be maybe like new versions of Bored Apes whenever the space explodes again. People will say, those are too expensive, we don't want those, we're going to create our own. And that'll happen. And people will rally around some of those. So there'll be some projects like that. And then there'll be some projects from 2021, this era, that get their historical narrative started and running. And that will be big multipliers.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. It's like, are people going to want to buy the bags that, you know, people are buying now? They'll probably have their own narratives and own bags. So it's really tough to position yourself in random shit going forward, for sure. I'm looking at Squiggle auction right now, trying to win a Squiggle, some Squiggles. So I don't know if anyone's familiar with that, what's going on there. I actually won't talk about it until it's over. But
Squiggles.com.
No, I don't know. Oh, is it still going? It looks like it's still going to me.
I was falling
I buy in a long time. Yeah, it's still fucking going, man, because it keeps re-upping 10 minutes.
Oh, shit.
Could we go into a little bit of detail, though, maybe? Like, what specifically have you bought maybe in the last 3 to 6 months? And you can get a bit shilly if you want to. Like, I just want to get into, like, what your thought process is around some of this stuff.
Okay, so I've bought a few different, like, lower-cap art projects, like, generative art projects. I think that... So Art Blocks is awesome. I don't take away from it at all. I think, and it's hard for people to release their own generative art projects. You know, outside of Autoglyphs, I can't think of any that are like super, super popular. It's either Autoglyphs or it's on Art Blocks. It's been hard for anybody to like create the network effect that, say, Art Blocks created for itself with all the projects and all the artists. But I like the idea of somebody who can do all the pieces. I think that's really cool. Maybe that's just me speaking to myself, because that's what I did with my own like generative art project. And like I think projects like that are interesting. I think some of those people could become, you know, bigger names. You know, some of the ones I think who've done some experimental things would be like Nahiko, Crash Blossom. So I bought some of their stuff. Figure 31 is named. So I bought some from these like kind of smaller, less well known, you know, not like a Tyler Hobbs. I guess QQL is an example of a project that was standalone that did big numbers and that people know. But generally it's hard because you have to do the marketing, you have to build the website yourself, you have to do the API stuff, unless it's, you know, on chain generated from the contract. Got to do the contract yourself. You got to write the generative code. There's a lot more work there. And I think that it could be appreciated more in the future because of the extra level of effort and the extra, you know, the barrier is a lot higher. Like generative art, just writing a script and then letting, you know, a platform handle all the hard pieces, maybe that looks more like rareable type art in the future versus these projects that are being fully built out. There's just, you know, far less of them. So that's kind of one angle. There was another one that I bought quite a lot of. They were using Bitcoin to store the metadata, which I thought was interesting as opposed to using like IPFS. So Bitcoin, super robust, you know, not as good as like storing on Ethereum because then you only have one failure point. But here your two failure points are Bitcoin and Ethereum is pretty robust system there. So I like that as maybe a potential narrative if somebody builds a platform. Actually, I think it would be a big idea if somebody built a platform to store metadata on, you know, Bitcoin as opposed to IPFS. And then like that's a thing that takes off, you know, the same way that people built platforms to store on IPFS for many years. And that kind of is what people know as the main way people store things now. So those are you a couple examples.
Have you looked at ordinals at all?
Yeah, I've looked into them. I haven't actually like started buying them. I almost bought some of the like the first, I think they were under 1,000 inscriptions, the punks under there. I thought that was pretty cool. And I felt like that was a pretty good narrative. I like things that are high friction. I hate like having to get over the hump to do it. But what I've noticed is, I mean, like, you know, being early is obviously a great way to get big multipliers and have good investment. So if people are like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm too lazy to do that. I don't want to mess with that. Usually you should not be lazy and you should do it, because then whenever the price is like going to the moon, all those people flood over and then you're already there. You're in early before them and stuff. So I do like that. I just have been lazy on that one, really.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a really interesting point in the market, right? Where like you just know that you're early just because no one can be bothered, or like it's a weekday, and like you know that if you're working all week, you're probably only going to be able to like look at it on Saturday or Sunday, and then by that time, you know, if you bothered to make the effort. But yeah, ordinals just kind of like went crazy overnight. It was still difficult, but it just feels like it does fit that narrative of what you're saying to a certain extent.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, I think that like stuff like that is what kind of captures people's attention. People are really late. I remember in like the ordinals, they kind of popped off a little bit whenever they were like sub 100K, like, you know, or sub even 10K. People were already talking about them, and that felt like something people could get excited about and be interested in. And the friction was high and all the pieces were there. And I told a number of people, like, we need to get over and like get into ordinals. Like it's like a good opportunity to make a lot of money, because, and people were, you know, already fudding it on the timeline. It's a flash in the pan. It's going to be dead. And I just don't really think so. I mean, I think as long as you have something that is actually kind of cool and you have people that actually care about it beyond just the very, very quick, like pump and dump, which is what you see with like most shitcoin rotations. And most of those will never come back. We all know that. We know there is no narrative for random insider pre-sale shitcoin. Like that will never come back. Nobody with a straight face can shill that on their Twitter. Like it's never going to happen. Like Bitcoin Ordinals has some real fans mixed in with people who are opportunistic. But, you know, there's a trend there. There's something, you know, a deeper kind of macro narrative there, I think.
Have you been trading any of these like shit coins that have come across lately? I mean, like, what are you doing nowadays?
He loves shit coins.
What about these shit coins?
Yeah, I trade shit coins.
Don't tell me about Pepe early and dumped it.
No, I didn't fumble Pepe. I just never caught it. I did catch a little bit of the turbo wave, but not a lot. I mean, I didn't make a ton of money really. I'm not the kind of person that can put in, you know, a big amount of money, $100,000 into a shitcoin. I just can't do it. I can't fucking, it's just too like mind consuming. I play with smaller, you know, single digit ETH positions. That's like the most I can go, which, so it's like, it's more just like a casino fun, like gambling game for me. And I know, and I'm not good at it. And you know, I get rugged a bunch of times. I think I got rugged like, I don't know. I closed out the season with like 5 or 6 rugs and I'm like, I'm fucking done with this shit. But, you know, I did a little shit coining today too. It's just fun. I mean, I can't help it. It's just something to do.
Yeah, for sure. So, maybe let's go on to some of your, because also the other thing about you is you have all these like, I don't know, legendary NFTs, like NFTs which people know about, like the Bean or the CryptoKitties, or like you build a narrative around them. So maybe let's go through, what are your top like 5 NFTs in your wallet right now?
Okay, yeah, I mean, I like to try to tell, I mean, because I think that the stories are important behind them. I think that's what people, you know, care about a little bit. And it's not really, to me, like I don't go shilling stuff that I've got like listed at a low price to try to like clean it out, because I think that that's just dirty as fuck. But like if I've got a Bean listed at fucking 300 Ether, I don't mind shilling that. And nobody's going to buy it there right now, you know, like so it doesn't feel like disingenuous. I'm just being stupid, I guess. But, you know, my best NFT is definitely like the CryptoKitty that I bought for $600,000 and that I've made fun of a number of times and that the Washington Post interviewed me about and made fun of. And they made fun of the first person who bought it in 2018 when he paid, you know, $120,000 for it, which was just unheard of at the time. It was, I think Christie's did the auction. So it has a little bit of history and lore there. And it came with this physical piece. And I know I was shit talking physical collectibles earlier, but it's like super cool. And I think that it really is like when I think of like NFTs that will be in a museum one day, or that we already have NFTs in museums, but like impressive, like really cool ones. Like you walk up and then it's in this glass box and there's like the physical, and it's not just a picture of it physical. It's like this custom made breadboard with all these wires sticking out of it and this little screen with the CryptoKitty on it, made by like the designer and some other, I guess, electrical engineers and stuff. And it just looks awesome. And then it's going to look awesome with the picture behind it and has all this, you know, history. And I paid $600,000 for that, which was fucking insane. But, and somebody offered me $2 million within. It's called
the first CryptoKitty.
No, it's not. So I offered $1 million dollars for the first CryptoKitty in 2021 and it got rejected. And then I circled back and bought this one for $600K. And now I've deluded myself into thinking this one's actually better, which is fine. It is actually, it is better. Now that I see, you know, it's going to look way more cool in a museum.
Nate Alex won't throw 100K into like a shitcoin that he has liquidity on, but he's just aping 600,000 to $1 million on a CryptoKitty. There's a pair like a...
There's a dichotomy there for sure. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I get it, feel though. Comfortable.
He loves cats. Like, clearly this guy loves cats.
You know, I feel comfortable in NFT positions, even if they're not liquid. Like, let's be realistic with this cat. As historic as I think it is, it would be hard for me probably to get 100K on it or 200K on it right now. But I think in the right market, the right kind of people that could be interested in it and how rich they might get, like, let's just say like Roam. I mean, he's probably already a billionaire, but let's say when he's worth 50 billion in the next bull cycle, and I just reach out to him, are you interested in buying CCD for 10 million? And like, oh, it's just 10 million. You know, you only need one ultra high end buyer if you have something that truly is elite like that. So, you know, I kind of know this is, I understand that it's probably will never be like, I mean, if it does sell for like a hero price like that, everybody's going to be like, what the fuck? I can't believe it. They're going to lose their fucking minds on Twitter over it. And that'll also be great. And it'll be like a good redemption arc. I think the same thing with like the Azuki Bean. Like, yes, I definitely overpaid for that. I know there's a lot of Azuki whales. There's a lot of guys, a ton of money. If the markets get insane and they dump some floors and they make tons and tons of money, you don't think that they're going to start buying some high-end assets for outrageous prices? The same way that I bought a 600K CryptoKitty, it's exactly the same. It's like, I didn't buy that because I was rich even a year before. I didn't even have 600K the year before that. Like, so the fact that you can see people will blow up through this space and will make a ton of money and they will spend tons of money on shit that's really cool. So a one of one bean could be part of the lore. Maybe Zagabond introduces it in that way. That was kind of why I bought it originally. Some other like high end items that I bought, I guess those are, you know, I've been buying like MF or one of ones, but sorry, but
I was just say, just to interject slightly, what I do quite like is that you've never, like what a lot of other whales do, they overpay for some random JPEG and then they make it their profile picture and then they use it to launch some sort of project. And, you know, you've never done that. Like your profile picture is actually, I don't even know what the hell it is right now. But although you have these stories about these assets, you don't actually, you haven't tried to, you know, I'm going to make the IP around punk this or bean this. Like,
yeah, I mean, I just, I just don't have a lot of interest and I don't have a lot of, I wouldn't know how to do that outside of just memeing them and making fun of them on Twitter. Like people recognize the bean if it's posted. Even the Crypto Kitty has had a couple of viral tweet hits, usually making fun of it. Like my Doodle Cat was pretty popular, but that was, you know, that was good, you know, good timing with buying it. And then
okay, I remember that.
You know, that market going insane. Somebody offered me 500 OTC for it. And I, you know, kind of wish maybe I should have taken that. You know, again, fumbling bags on both ends. My PFP now, I'm a little disappointed you don't know what that is. So that's from, I guess a lot of people probably don't know. It's from Chain Faces Arena. It was like a cheap CFA that I bought.
Oh, of course.
For like $30 or something, like, or $20. It's like, and that's the thing is, who gives a shit? Like, I don't care. I don't need to have, you know, $1 million PFP for people who know me anyways to know that I know at least a little bit of something. So, yeah, I mean, whatever. I just kind of get impulsive and just do things like, fuck it. Like, yeah, I have all these expensive ass NFTs and I'll tweet about them and make fun of them. And then I'll just use a $20 one and whatever. I think it's cool. I mean,
I'd like to spin this into a little bit about like how you deal with the mental swings of like with crypto, I feel like a lot of us have made crazy impulsive decisions. Some have gone poorly, some have gone well. And especially with trading also, like it's a lot of quick decision-making and stuff like that. And sometimes you lose. So we always like to get in the mind of our guests and hear about how they handle their losses. You know, do you have like a certain thing you do or like, how do you bounce back mentally after things don't go the way you plan them to go?
I guess, honestly, I just don't care. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that's like,
so you're just a quick forgetter. I mean, you have to have a short memory in the trading game. That is for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know how it goes. Like it just, you know, that is the game you're playing. You're going to have some big wins and, you know, I guess I would say that like big losses maybe stick with me a little more, but also with anything that I've spent a ton of money on, I think that I've only spent over 100K on maybe 10 NFTs, which I guess is still a lot, but I don't typically spend a lot of money on an NFT if I don't really think this is the fucking thing. Like my CryptoKitty, you know, again, easily if we're talking like I need to sell it tomorrow because I'm out of money, I'm probably going to take $500,000 loss on it. And then realizing that is going to be really painful. But the fact that I know that I can wait until shit gets crazy again, like, can I find a buyer for more than 600K in that market? Absolutely. Fuck yes. I know for a fact that I can. I feel very confident, like CryptoKitty's founder is a good enough narrative. It'll circle back. They'll blow up. They'll be selling for mid six figures again. And then in that market, you know, a really truly elite CryptoKitty at $1 million or $2 million doesn't look crazy at all. And maybe next time I take that offer, or maybe I get delusional and I wait for $10 million again. But with those things, you know, there are a few losses I took last year. Like I bought a one of one crypto Mori for like $100,000. That was super painful because by the end of the year, I really felt like this will never come back. I will never get close to this. And I just Dutch auctioned it to zero. No, it was never mind. It was a regular auction, but with no reserve. Like, I literally don't care. Somebody buy this shit today. Let me farm this loss. And it sold for like, I don't know, like 8,000 or something. So that was a big loss. That was painful, but I wrote it off against cap gains and, you know, whatever. And I think that you just have to get used to winning and losing in this space. There's no magic way to win every bet. And, you know, I make tons of bets and a lot of them are maybe lower probability, but when I get them correct, they can be huge multipliers. Like let's say TradFi lines. I mean, this is mostly luck. KM has been, not Keyboard Monkey, the original KM that I knew was Kitten Mittens from CryptoKitties. And he's like this massive CryptoKitties whale, but he made this project and I just thought it was cool. So I bought like 30 of them and it was like 0.3 ETH for like 30 of them. And then he deployed them to Bitcoin ordinals in this first 10,000. Cause he just like just is actually interested in the tech and making cool stuff. And I wasn't like buying it to think that they would be worth something one day. And then I just wake up and that 0.3 ETH is worth 100 Ether in like the market just went insane on him. Like, holy shit. Like I just woke up, and that's the kind of bets that I like to make is the things, you know, I don't want to spend 100 Ether on, well, not 100 Ether wouldn't be anything for Bored Apes. I don't want to spend 1,000 Ether on Bored Apes and wait for them to go to 1,500 and then try to move them all. That just doesn't really interest me. I'd rather spend 5 or 10 Ether and then hope that those go to 100 or 200. And then, you know, and then whenever the market is picking up, you can start rolling and you can make those high-end degen flips that you get to see during, you know, the bull market.
When do you think we'll get back to a market where we can make big sales like that? And what other, you know, you've been through maybe a couple of cycles now. What are like the early signs to look out for to tell you we're heading in that direction?
So there will be like retail's presence, at least to me in 2020, late 2020 was really obvious. Like I remember telling people like something is different. The crowd seems different. There's all these new people. They're not just like, it's not just the same degens. They're not just like trying to scam each other. They're just trying to learn and figure stuff out. And they're asking really basic questions. And like their presence was super obvious. And I think Ether was only like $250 at the time. So still pretty early into that cycle. And I expect we'll see like retail interest. And I think that comes in really with Bitcoin performing well. So Bitcoin at 50,000 or 60,000 or something like that. That probably starts getting people dabbling again. While we're down here, like in the dirt, it just is us. Like it's just us trading against each other. There's not a lot of high end buyers. And honestly, most of the stuff you see is just like just rotation from one flavor of the week to the next. And you know, you can't like sustain that way at all because there's just limited liquidity and it's all chasing itself around and we're making money and losing money. And it just isn't the same. Whenever shit starts going crazy, like when punks started taking off, it felt like it just went completely straight up. There's never a dip. It was like, oh, I'll get back in. I'll get back. No, there's no getting in. It just fucking sent.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of maybe this is like really like left curving it, but I'm like a cycle maxi. I think, I mean, I really just think that trend has played out so many times. And I know people say, oh, well, it's played out so many times, that's why it won't this time. I don't know. I think that's kind of maybe middle curve in thinking. So I kind of expect like Bitcoin halving happens again. You know, nothing happens and people get disappointed, but like that's where like the accumulation kind of starts. And then, you know, sometime end of next year, like we're starting to really see some retail interest. I mean, it's impossible to predict these things, obviously, but that's my general sort of timeline. The more important thing for me to look out for is going to be like genuine retail interest. When I start seeing that, then I'm going to start trying to make a bunch of plays that I think they will make. Right now, most of the plays I make are, they have to be longer term because, you know, I'm just not interested in trading something and trying to sell it next week for the most part, and catching momentum and figuring out the Twitter trend of the week. Like I just am not very good at that. I'm a lot better at predicting where the where the narrative might go.
The hard thing about getting retail interest is when you had like 2017 to 2020, people started to make like hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars for the first time in that space. And maybe you had like some big cryptocurrency sales back in the day, but this was happening on like quite a big scale. So it's very easy for retail traders to come into the space. But now we're in this position where like people have lost. I mean, people made that much, but people have also lost that much. So the perception of retail right now is very much like, this is a scam, or I've come in here, I've been burned.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It feels like it will take a lot to like overturn that. And maybe it can be overturned. I mean, it's happened in crypto for a decade now. That cycle keeps repeating itself and we keep seeing higher highs. I guess the question is, are we going to see that in the NFT world? I think I think it will come back for sure, but a lot of people are probably sitting there thinking the jury is still out on that one.
A lot of people are still thinking it. For me, I don't really, I mean, I think it's the same as Bitcoin coming back time and time again. I mean, I see like NFTs, I mean, this is like maybe a generic take, but NFTs being sort of a leverage kind of play on like, say, ETH. And I honestly was shocked that Punks outperformed ETH by a huge margin too. Whenever I was selling Punks in, you know, 2020, it wasn't because I didn't think they were cool. It wasn't because I didn't think they would go up in value. It was because I thought that they would get outperformed by Ether. It was hard for me to imagine ETH going from $200 to, let's say, $3,000 or $4,000, where I kind of was thinking is maybe where a cycle top could have been. It was hard for me to imagine a 20x there and then somehow Punks like going 100x. Like I didn't realize that, well, where does that money go? Like when we're all making a ton of money, we're spending a ton of money. Some people are extracting and putting into houses and buying cars and stuff. But a lot of people here are just fucking taking it back to the casino and fucking going deeper. I mean, you saw Alex Weiss run $1 million to nine figures and right back down. I mean, that's, you know, and for me too, like I look at like my biggest spins in my whole life outside of like houses that I've bought. It's like NFTs, like crypto. That's like my biggest,
yeah,
multiple times, like shit. So, you know, I expect that to happen again. I expect money will roll into NFTs. And don't take this the wrong way. If you're listening, like if you have some NFT now and it has no narrative and has nothing special about it, and there's nothing unique, there's no story that can be told about it, it's going to be hard for it to come back. I mean, it's just, a lot of that shit will just bleed to zero. Like tons of old shit coins from 2017 did. But there will be stories told. I think a big one, you know, if I'm going to shill myself a little bit here, whatever, like I'm really interested in building projects that leverage like the block, like they have to be on a blockchain, like Chainface Arena. You needed it to be, you know, so there was, for anybody who doesn't know, there was this bounty pool, the arena, and you could enter your Chainface into it. And basically it was just a giant game of chicken, really. So whoever stayed in there the longest, well, if you were in the arena every day, random faces were dying. And if you died, you just lost your NFT and it was gone. And that was like this deflationary impact on the collection. You could leave the arena at any time and you could claim your proportional share of the bounty pool. But as you survived longer and longer, your proportional share would go up. So like at the end, the bounties got really large. Like the last bounty was, you know, like $170,000 or something. So it was kind of just this mini game, but it had to be like part of, it had to leverage like smart contracts. It was all like trustless, you know, the art, the ASCII stuff, the generation, the SCAR application, all this stuff was done by the contract. And the longer you survived, the more scars you got in the arena. So I just think it was cool to like do a project that needs to use the blockchain, and every project that I've ever done has that as part of it. And there's just not many projects that do that. And I think that that will be something, because there's just another level of engagement and entertainment there. Projects that do that I think that will be a big narrative in the same way that like on-chain art became a big narrative in 2021. So I'm looking forward to that because that will be beneficial to me. That's the kind of projects I like to make. That's the kind of projects that I have made. So, you know, there just aren't a lot of those projects out there right now. Not a lot of people really even understand what the fuck that means. They're just used to picture on a token and we play hot potato, and that's what an NFT is. And I think that's boring and stupid, and we'll move past that eventually.
Yeah, I think you need uniqueness to introduce longevity, especially in the NFT space. And the more unique something is and the way it uses crypto and whatnot, it's definitely helpful in that regards. As we get to the closing question here, Nate, because we're about to run out of time pretty soon, we always ask our guests how best not to get wrecked. I mean, you know, just like anyone else, how not to get wrecked. So let's get that advice out there. And then if you want to stick around, we're going to do some loot box spins sponsored by Rollbit. And some people are going to win some of these.
Sweet. Okay, so how to avoid getting wrecked. It's really, you know, I wish I could give something like really insightful here. But I mean, for me, it's just you never overbet. Don't spend all your fucking money in one thing. Like, it's good to have conviction, but you need to, you can't, even if something is seems super safe and it's like, oh, this is a pure, this is definitely a 20% gain. Like, you need to approach things and kind of spread your bets in a way that you can survive if they go wrong. Like for me, it's Ether, I think, is pretty safe. You know, Bitcoin is pretty safe. Outside of that, nothing in crypto I would consider to be really safe. And so you shouldn't be putting 100% of your net worth in anything. And I know people do that and it works out for them sometimes. But I think that if you think of this game as being, you know, the longer you can play it, the more that you can grow your stack, you know, the more that compounds, that will grow into a big number on its own. Just because you don't have a lot of money, if you only have $10,000 and your goal is to make it to a million, if you take 10,000 and you throw it all into random shit coins, maybe you win on some of them, but you're going to get busted sooner or later. And then your whole stack is gone. And then everything is, and then it's over. I mean, you know, the same with like 100x leverage trading. You know, I mean, you could do that with a little bit. You can do it with smaller pieces of your stack, but you know, you should never. At least that's my thing. Is it's just about survival. You know, you're going to take some losses, but be able to survive the losses and just keep kind of overall trying to make the right plays.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. I agree. It's patience, discipline, good bet sizing. All that stuff that a lot of the guests who have been successful have said. And yeah, all things that
apart from Gainsy.
Apart from Gainsy. All things we need to interact with. I just bought the first two NFTs I bought in quite a long time.
Oh, nice. Congrats.
I won two of those squiggles in that auction. I can't wait to see what squiggles I get. I just paid 20 ETH for both, first and second place. So we're going to see some squiggles on the timeline soon. Minted by Snowfro. They better be fucking cool. Good and not floors. I think the gambling aspect got me to really pay up and win this shit. I was like, I'm not losing this. It's going to be a hyper rainbow that I had to sell. I'm going to get another one back. But anyway.